Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. It's your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I'm really excited. I have Dr. Lynette Charity with me. And Dr. Charity, MD, is a board-certified anesthesiologist with over 35 years of experience putting people to sleep. She's also a keynote speaker, humorist, and author. In aspiring to become a doctor, she met many dream smashers along the way, people who wanted to squish, squash, and stomp on her dream. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Charity to our show today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Belinda.
Yes, absolutely. So why don't we just jump in here and tell us a little bit about your journey along the way and fill in some of the gaps of this bio and just really fill our listeners in on what you're doing to help serve them today.
Well, let's see, where shall I start? We'll start with the fact that I grew up in the segregated South in 1952. And during that period of time, I wasn't sure what my purpose was. I didn't have any idea whatsoever. And it's interesting that I was watching a TV show called Ben Casey. I'm watching this show. This guy comes out. He looks at me. And literally, I heard him say, "Lynette, you're going to be a doctor." At least that's what I thought I heard. But I was 9 years old, and for once in my life, having grown up in an abusive home, an alcoholic father, my sister was hit by a car and killed when she was 2 years old. There were a lot of things going on in my very young life. At that moment, I had some clarity, and I said, "All right, this is my purpose. This is what I want to do. Now, how do I do it?" And as I said before, I was living in the segregated South, and Virginia hadn't quite gotten the memo yet that schools were to be integrated. But finally, 12 years later, it was 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, that said that school, separate but equal schools, was unconstitutional. But as I said, I was growing up still in, I lived in a colored neighborhood, I had colored friends, and I couldn't go to a color, I had to go to a colored school. But I decided the best way for me to become a doctor was I needed to go to the white school that was right across the main drag of where I lived. There was the colored neighborhood, a big boulevard, and then right across the street was that school. And I had been told that they had better books. So I said, this is where I want to go. And fortunately for me, in 1966, Virginia finally got the memo and they started desegregating the schools. I had to actually forge my mother's signature because she was afraid for me to go. She knew all about what had been happening in the world with the Little Rock Nine and with the young woman from Louisiana, who was the first to go to her school. And she was concerned that I would get hurt. But I said, Mom, I'm going to go. I got to go. So here I am. I'm 15 years old. I had never, ever been through that neighborhood. I walked through that neighborhood. Yeah, people were not very nice to me. But the point is that I made it. And I was there for 3 years. I graduated with honors, despite the fact that my guidance counselor said, now you may be able to get into one of those Negro colleges, but no medical school is going to take a colored girl. I just said, divine eminence, something is going to happen. And lo and behold, a college in Pittsburgh found me some kind of way. And they gave me a bus ticket, had me come up there and interview Chatham College for Women at the time. And I received a 4-year full academic scholarship to college.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
Yep. And you know, the rest is kind of history. I went there for 4 years. I majored in biology and chemistry. I graduated with honors from there, and I was accepted to Tufts University School of Medicine. And I started there in 1974 and received my MD degree in 1978.
Well, that is, congratulations, first of all. And good for you for following your dream. I mean, that's really what all that is about. You know, it's not letting anybody stand in your way, not letting your circumstances stand in your way. And that's what too many people, they give up before they even try with their set of circumstances or what life has thrown them, you know, and they don't even really try. And that's probably the biggest mistake I see people make as a whole, is just never even trying and resigning themselves that their, you know, destination has already been, you know, decided for them. So good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, we listen sometimes too hard to our inner critic that constantly is telling us what we can't do. And sometimes I say, you just have to turn that off, because, you know, if you never try, how will you ever know? You know, how will you ever know if you never try? If I had said, if my guidance counselor said I wasn't going to get into medical school because of the color of my skin. Now, I could have believed her, but to be honest with you, I think it's really good when you have no plan B. You know, when you say, I want to do this and you have no backup, then it's like, well, I got to go after this and see if I can do it. And that's what I did. And I met other obstacles along the way. But the point is that I just kept my eye on the prize and I just went after it. You know, don't let anyone ever tell you what you can't do. You have to make that decision for yourself.
You know what I love about what you said, and I've had other friends in acting that I've had guests on the show, and they've just said, you know, I was at the beginning focused on my plan B, because everybody tells you, well, you got to have a plan B. What if this doesn't work out for you? And in doing that, they were like, I'm not serving myself well. There was confusion. So they just kind of let go of that. But my daughter gets that. She's a young, she's 16, and she's going to an acting and performance art high school. And people ask her all the time, well, you know, it's so hard to make it as an actor. So what's your plan B? Mm-hmm. And so I always tell her, you don't need a plan B. It can be hard, but there are people that make it every day. They might, and people that are enjoying their career and making money, but they might not be super famous. Like you can make it if you keep your focus. And so she's always said that, I have no plan B because I'm going to make plan A work. And
that's it.
But people say that to her on a constant, regular basis, even today. So it's just, that's how people think.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate, because are you going to be happy with that plan B if you're always thinking about the fact that this is my backup, you know, I can fall back on this, but you're not as driven in that plan as you are with plan A? Is that going to make you happy by being in plan B? Because I always feel like you dilute your energy if you have too many plans. Stick with one, take that all the way to the end or wherever it peters out, and then reassess, repivot. What are we doing now? That's all that we're doing. I'm a keynote speaker. All of my keynotes dried up when COVID started.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this last year, I have been reinventing myself, learning virtual, learning, you know, just taking in things that interest me. And by the way, I'm also a stand-up comic. So I have been working on new material, because once we can get out of this, I've been doing stuff online virtually. But to be a comedian, I honestly feel like you got to be in a live audience. So, but the point is that I am staying in my happy place by finding things that bring me joy. And this is what we need to do now, is that everybody's looking at the negative of this situation and they're becoming depressed and they just don't see any hope in the world. My feeling is that, you know, there's a sparkle of something every time my grandson, I have a 2.5-year-old grandson, says, "Nana, let's play this or let's do this." It's all of a sudden like I've been rebooted to another happy part, because if I listen to the news all the time, like people are doing now, all you do is see negativity. We need to find the positivity in all of this. Everybody, there's something funny in everything that is happening right now. Just find it, you know? And I tell people all the time, laughter, as we have seen in a lot of studies right now, laughter is the best medicine right now. We need it to elevate our mood. We need those endorphins, you know, a good guffaw. You can even lose a little weight, you know, but I just found that if I can make people laugh and I laugh, you know, I get up every morning and the first thing I do is I look around the room. First, I check my body parts because I'm a woman of a certain age and it's like, all right, I got a new pain here. I got a new pain here. Oh, but that's good. That's good material. Let me write that down and I'll do some writing. And then I get up and I stretch and I go, hello, I'm ready. What's out there for me to do today? Because we can't dwell on the negativity of this world right now.
We certainly can not. That's fantastic advice. So kind of have a little bit of an idea, but just how has your business shaped your lifestyle? So obviously you practiced medicine for a while, and then how did you transition into are you still practicing medicine? And did you, at what point did you transition into becoming a professional speaker?
Your listeners may know some of this and they may not, but healthcare has changed over the course. I've practiced now. I retired last year after 41 years. And but when I turned 60, 8 years ago, medicine had gotten to this point where it was foreign to me. I felt like a dinosaur in it, even though I was good at what I did, the bureaucracy of it all was weighing me down. And I just didn't know how to adapt. Also, I was older, so doing 24-hour call and being late at the hospital and not getting bathroom breaks and certain things, they just sort of weighed on me. And I decided that it was necessary for me to think about doing something else. Remember, I told you I never had a plan B. So medicine was all I had. And the funny thing that happened is that I woke up one morning. It was actually right after my 60th birthday. I woke up and I said, I want to be a stand-up comic, lounge singer, voiceover actor. Bam. And it was like it was in my head. And I told someone that, and of course we have those dream smashers, naysayers out there. One of my colleagues said, you know, Lynette, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. My advice, keep your day job. You know, and you know, maybe somebody else that would have, stopped them. And I thought about it for a moment, you know, is this the right thing? You know, I'm doing okay as a physician. I could do this for another few years. I go, but it's, you know, the passion is not there anymore. So I continued my day job, you know, I kept my day job, but in the background, I started doing research. I hired a comedy coach and I started doing comedy. I hired a voice coach, and my voice coach said, you know, Lynette, you could be a backup singer, but you know, I don't think that you could do anything else. So I kind of gave up on that. I did some demos. I'm a woman of color, and I have this very, what people would say, distinct voice. I've had people on a bus or on a train, they hear my voice and they recognize me because they've met me somewhere or they've heard my voice somewhere. So I started doing these voiceovers, and that didn't really come to fruition. But someone said, you know, Lynette, if you have a very distinctive voice, if you would like to be a professional speaker, that voice will come in handy. And then I thought, oh, well, what would I speak on? I don't know. And that came to me a few years after I was working, when I had a very dear colleague die by suicide. And I went, I saw some of the things that was going on with him, but I didn't really know how to assess that. And so I started reading up on physician suicide and found that almost 400 physicians die by suicide every year. And I went, wow. Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. So I did more research on it. And I go, and it brought back a memory that I had suppressed over time in that I myself had almost died of suicide. So when that memory jumped back into my consciousness, I revisited the story behind why I ended up on a bridge ready to kill myself at the age of 45. And once I looked through all the elements of that, it came down to the fact that I have suffered with depression all my life. You know, from the time that, you know, as I told you, my sister was killed in front of me at the age of 2. She was hit by a car and killed. And I think that was the stimulus or the start of this history that I have of depression. Plus, my father had what would be called now PTSD, but he was in World War II, and they called it shell shock back then.
Right.
So there are a lot of things. I just kept doing all of this research and going, oh my goodness, this is where I need to go now in my life. I need to go, and I need to be able to go out there and speak to this, because there are a lot of physicians who, because of the stigma associated with mental illness and healthcare workers, they're not comfortable sharing their stories. But hey, mine is a comedy routine, so I can tell anybody my story. And I always say, spoiler alert, I did not kill myself, you know. And just to break the ice, I tell my story, I tell them I didn't kill myself, and then I give them the facts about depression, burnout, you know, and suicide amongst physicians. That's sort of my group, but okay. I can speak to anyone about it.
Awesome. Yeah, that's an awesome. People like to know, how did you transition from one piece to another? You did that so eloquently, so thank you. Let's talk about skill sets. What do you think you've sort of identified as your superpowers that have just really helped you along this journey of success?
Well, I really feel that you have the Debbie Doubter in your head. You have that inner critic. And when you said about the Dream Smashers, I was a member of Toastmasters back when I was starting to decide that I wanted to be a speaker. I wanted to become a better speaker. So I started out in Toastmasters, and they came to me one day and they said, you know, Lynette, you could compete in our speech contest. And I go, what speech contest? And they said, oh, we have an annual international speech contest every year. And I go, well, what do you talk on? And they go, you can find anything, but it has to be crafted into a 5 to 7 minute speech. So the first speech that I gave was called Beware of the Dream Smashers. And I gave that speech and I won. And I gave another speech and I won. I went all the way to Kuala Lumpur and won a third place trophy in the semifinals at the World Championship of Public Speaking put on by Toastmasters. And I said to myself, you know, this is good. Learning from people who are the experts and not assuming that you can do it all by yourself. This is the biggest problem with people now when it comes to coaching. People say, oh, you look like you're a natural. You're just I said, no, I'm a natural because I had coaches all along the way who knew better than me and taught me well. And if you get out of your own way and you get the mindset that you're going to be open to people giving you prompts, giving you ideas of how you can better your business, better your life, lose weight, become a leader. All of those things they're not there in you necessarily. You need someone to bring those powers out. And my powers were brought out by all of my coaches, you know, and that's what I tell people now when they ask me. I said, get a coach, find someone that you can communicate with that knows you. And actually I have four because I have a business coach, I have a speaking coach, I have a comedy coach, and I have a career coach. And I've kept these people in my life for the last 8 years because ever so often I'll hit a roadblock. I'll go, oh, I can't do this. Oh, let me call so-and-so. And I call, I make an appointment, we do it, and I have a new direction. So the key to success is, you know, believe in yourself, obviously, but also believe in the power of having a mentor.
I love that. I always tell everybody, you should always, at every single point in your life, have a mentor and be a mentor. If everybody just thought about that, who can I mentor and who can I be mentored by? If we all just thought about that and practiced that, it would be so amazing for so many people. It'd be incredible.
Yeah. I mentor. I went to Chatham College for Women. That's now Chatham University in Pittsburgh. And I mentor a student there who's going to medical school. And it's amazing to look at this 18-year-old getting ready to go through college. She's going through college. She just got a 4.0 for her first year, her first semester. And I was so excited. We were on a call last night. And I just love seeing her eagerness to learn. And she thinks that I'm the best thing since sliced bread. You know, it's like it's nice to be appreciated when you get to be, you know, a person of a certain age that someone actually looks up to you. So mentoring is good. Plus it makes you feel good. Doesn't mm-hmm. I mean I love to coach people. You know, I don't even have to charge. I just like giving, I like to impart my wisdom to help people get ahead. My reward will come at some other time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what's working from your happy place mean to you?
Oh my goodness. It just means living this life to the fullest. Right now, a lot of things have been thrown at us right now that could knock us out of our happy place. But every day I try to find, obviously I'm sequestered in my home, but I have pictures of my kids. I have pictures of friends. I make phone calls. I have a 90-year-old friend that I taught how to use FaceTime. And even though sometimes when we FaceTime, all I can see are her nose hairs because she holds it so close to her face. And I have to say, pull it back. You know, let me see your face, you know. But she makes me laugh, you know. She'll say things. And it doesn't take much to get a good chuckle out of life. It really doesn't. And all you need is to spend, we talk about meditating and all of that. That's one thing to get you in your zone, but you need to just laugh. You need to laugh. I the other day I got out and my foot was numb because I had slept wrong and everything. So I'm dragging it around. I'm going, ooh, golly, I could play Igor if I wanted to. Master. And I cracked myself up. I find everything is just funny. You got to find things that are funny. You know, I tell people, turn your problems into punchlines. That's one of the sayings that I got from one of my comedy coaches. And it's true. If you're above ground and you have a roof over your head and, you know, you're around people that love you. And even if not, if you can just look at your situation and just go, oh my goodness, that right there is a good joke. That's a good funny. And just make yourself laugh. It's good. So that's how I work for my happy place. And I have to find it every day. It's not something that's always there because both I have a brother that had a stroke in September. And then on top of that, he got COVID and his wife got COVID. And when I would talk to them initially, it was like, you know, can this get any worse? And then, you know, my brother called me up one day. He does have this aphasia, which is a difficulty speaking. But he just said something to me. He just said, you know, Lynette, you know, isn't this something else? And just the way he said it, because he got out a whole sentence because he had been having problems with that. And I call him Butch. I said, Butch, you know, you cracked me up. He goes, I cracked me up. And then we both started laughing. And here's a man who has gone through something that has devastated his life. He's gotten two things in there. And even with his wife, it's the same thing. We just try to find the funny in anything and everything we can. And obviously, we have to manage this life that we're in. But that doesn't mean that we always have to, it has to be doom and gloom and the glass half empty all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that's it.
I love that. And my favorite little nugget, I always like to try to point out gold nuggets to people listening because sometimes they miss them or they don't realize like how awesome that was. But turn your problems into punchlines. I love that so much. I mean, I wrote that really big on my paper and I'm probably going to borrow it. I just absolutely love that.
It is the truth. When we
so true.
When we can do that and turn it into a joke, it's just, you know, I talk about being an anesthesiologist. Those are my comedy routines. And the first thing I say is, hey, I'm Dr. Charity. I'm an anesthesiologist. That's right. I get paid to pass gas. And that's the first, you know, I cut the ice with my jokes right then and there because people laugh at that because they can envision. And then I'll say, you know, growing up in the segregated South, you know, eating black eyed peas and collard greens, I used to pass gas for free, you know, and I get a little chuckle from that. And then I just go on and I have this whole routine, but it's all about helping people to just see that. You know, I'm a doctor. I've been a doctor for 40 years. And the biggest thing has been that ever so often I've had patients say things like, you're a doctor? I didn't know anesthesiologists were doctors. And people would say, Dr. Charity, why in the world don't you explain to them? I say, number one, you can't fix stupid. So we'll just leave that alone. But number two is that I'll go, oh my goodness, I'm not a doctor? Really? Oh, well, you're going to get me anyway, but I did read on the box, on a Matchbox cover that you too can be a doctor if you color in this pirate and pay $10. And these patients, they're looking at me and they're going, is this woman serious? And then I go, nah, I'm your doctor. Yeah, I really am. And then when they wake up, they go, do you know what? You just waylaid all of my fears. I think I was just afraid when I came in and you just made it. And you made me laugh. And that's the one thing that I do is I make my patients laugh. I make anybody laugh who wants, you know, laughter is truly the best medicine.
It absolutely is. I agree. So in closing, what I'd love for you to do is give our listeners some advice on wanting to go into a new path, like going into maybe a completely new career or a new entrepreneurial journey. I'd love you to give some listeners some advice on how they might do that. And then I'd also love for you to tell our listeners how they can find you.
Well, I think the most important thing, because you can imagine, or your listeners might can imagine, they might say, oh my goodness, you know, she did this when she was 60 years old,
mm-hmm.
Changing this path. I don't know if I could. I mean, that's really difficult. You know, you should retire. But the point is that if something truly is calling to you, and I called medicine my calling, and then I also called speaking my calling. When something is pulling you to do it, do it. Do it. And yes, you know, there are going to be obstacles. I mean, the investment can be pricey, but the point is that the reward can be so much better, even if it's not necessarily financial. You know, we are on this earth for a limited amount of time, and therefore we need to do things that bring us joy. And we cannot worry about our age, our sex, you know, anything. We have to think about the fact that what can we impart to the world that might be the best thing ever? And we won't know that if we go, oh my goodness, I'm too old to do this. Oh my goodness, I don't have enough money. As I said, I stayed in medicine until I was ready to fully transition, that I felt that I was comfortable cutting that tie. And it's sometimes hard. It's hard to make mm-hmm. that decision. But, you know, have a day job while you're looking at your new dream. That's okay. Yep. It's okay. Just have mm-hmm. them to pay the bills. But don't not do it. Double negatives there. You know, you got to do it. You got to. I tell people all the time, I don't want any regrets when I close my eyes for the last time.
I love that. Absolutely. Well, this has absolutely been delightful. Dr. Charity, where can they find you? Where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me. My website is drcharityspeaks.com. I'm also on Facebook at Lynette Charity. I'm on Instagram at Keynote Charity at Instagram. And I'm on LinkedIn at Lynette Charity MD.
Well, perfect.
That's it.
Well, this has been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for sharing your story, your pearls of wisdom, and really your inspiration. It was very inspirational today. So I personally want to thank you for that. I just had my 60th birthday yesterday. So
congratulations.
Well, thank you. So what you were saying was really hitting home for me, because I sit there and think, okay, you know, I've been doing this for, 30 years, and I love what I do, but like, is there something else out there that I still want to do? And have I put limits on myself of what I can or cannot do? And that's what I really woke up thinking. So you've been a huge inspiration to me today. So thank you so much for that. And I didn't even know that as we were going through this story. So that was awesome.
Oh,
and cool. I am just really excited about what 2021 is going to bring for everyone. And I know that people just need to, I think your pearls of wisdom and just keeping it real, keeping it, make sure you remember to laugh and don't let anybody squash your dreams. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
You're quite welcome, Belinda. Thank you for having me.
All right. And to all of our listeners out there, please make sure that you leave us a review. We absolutely love that. It's so important for the show. And also make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. We're really excited here this year about helping you move forward to be your absolute best at whatever it is that you want to do. And we're going to have great interviews, great tools for you. And we're really excited about where we're going with Work From Your Happy Place in 2021. So make sure that you don't miss a single episode. Until next time, we'll see you again on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.